Good evening. Looks like we can buy with the quorum tonight. We'll get started though. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the Northern Regional Advisory. My name's Bryce Thurgood. I'm the chair of the Northern RAC. First off, we'll start over here with Mike and have the council introduce themselves. We'll go around.
Mike Lauder, Hooper Sportsman's Rep.
Kevin McLeod, Plain City, at large.
Matt Clark, Ogden, at large.
Aaron Johnson, West Weber, Sportsman.
Paul Chase, Forest Service, out of Logan.
Chad Jensen, elected, Paradise.
Darren Perry, Shoshone Nation.
Kristen Purdy, Ogden, non-consumptive.
And Justin Doling, I'm with the Division of Wildlife, serve as the Executive Secretary, and I'm a non-voting member.
Okay, thank you. This time we'd also like to recognize Byron Bateman from the Wildlife Board. He's always here to represent the Wildlife Board, and we appreciate him coming. So at this time also, if everybody would take a quick second and turn off their cell phones, even though we say it every time, it seems like two or three people always forget, but that way we can have some sort of uninterrupted meeting. Purpose of the Regional Advisory Council is to gather input from the public concerning wildlife management policy, rules, and regs. The council then makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board. The Wildlife Board considers the recommendations from the five regional advisory councils and sets policy for all protected species in Utah. Just to make a quick note of that too, if you guys have never been to the Wildlife Board, the wildlife chair, ask each one of us specifically how we vote, explains it, they do take our consideration, so it's just not passed on, with a blind thought. Everybody, please respect everyone's right to an opinion, even if it is conflicts with yours. No clapping, vocal outbursts. The meeting will be recorded for the transcription of the minutes. The audio recording of minutes will be available at the DWR website. When speaking, please speak in the microphone and speak clearly into it, and so we can hear it. The public will use the microphone located at the front. Speaker should state their name and, if they wish, where they are from. If you would, please take a look at tonight's agenda. If there is no objection, we will approve tonight's agenda as presented. Seeing none, we'll approve it as presented. The next item we're going to do is the Wildlife Board update. Oh, yeah. Was there any comments on the minutes from the last meeting? Okay. Seeing none, we'll approve those as corrected. The Wildlife Board meeting update, we're going to have Randy. Give us the Wildlife Board update from the last Wildlife Board meeting.
Randy Wood, Wildlife Manager. At the board meeting, we started off with the Mountain Goat Plan and then the Bighorn Sheep Plan, and both of those had a lot of discussion that came about. On the Goat Plan, we had a motion to accept the statewide Mountain Goat Plan as presented, and that was passed 5 in favor with 1 abstention. Then moving on to the Bighorn Sheep Management Plan, really quick, when it came around to the RACs, hopefully when you reviewed it and that you noticed in there's a section that deals with allowing a producer or a wool grower, his immediate family, or a person that's employed by him to lethally remove a bighorn sheep that is mixed in with their sheep. That was in the plan, but with that we didn't have any guidance, a plan put together as how that would work, and we would work on an MOU with the Department of Ag for this. So on the bighorn sheep plan, the first motion was add to the action log that the division give a progress report on the management plan's lethal removal process and MOU every board meeting until it's complete. And that passed unanimous. And then the next motion was to support the statewide bighorn sheep management plan as presented, and that passed unanimous. Moving on to buck and bull once in a lifetime, there was a lot of discussion here, a lot of talk going on in several motions here. We started off with to add to the action log item that, and this is the first motion, that the division attempts to define a primitive weapon hunt and have the board review it next April in 2019. And the way I understood this is they want to add, right now we have an any weapon, we have archery, and we have muzzleloader. They would like us to look at trying to define what a primitive weapon, to add a fourth weapon type in there. So that motion passed unanimous. The next motion was to approve the Barney Top limited entry archery only elk hunt and have the same age categories on that elk hunt as the surrounding units, with the understanding that the hunt would eventually become a primitive weapons hunt. So that's kind of where that came in. That motion failed 2-4. The next motion was to add to the action log item that the division review the Barney Top limited entry archery elk only hunt proposal and the primitive weapon hunt and provide the pros and cons of each either as one or two separate reports to the board. And that passed unanimous. Another motion in the Bucks and Bulls was to include the once-in-a-lifetime archery sheep hunt on the Newfoundland and the Zion units with the season dates that the division proposed, and that passed unanimous. And the next motion was to return the Monroe unit to spike elk only rifle, to a spike only rifle elk hunt. That passed unanimous. The next motion was not that they not approve the early rifle hunt on the Ponsatgon Lake unit. That failed 2-4. Next motion in Bucks and Bulls was to approve extending the east boundary of the extended archery unit of the Green River as proposed by the division. That passed unanimous. And the final motion in this section was to accept the balance of the buck and bull once in a lifetime as presented. That passed unanimous. Moving on into the CWMUs. Two CWMU applications came in late and the RACs never heard them. They did show up to the board to present at the board. So there's a couple motions here in CWMUs. The first one was to accept the Mountain Meadows CWMU late application for deer season date changes and a deer permit reduction. That Mountain Meadows is actually in our region. So that came in late to the board. In addition, the double R, which is not in our region, requests to add an extra 15 days to their bull elk season. That passed unanimous. The second motion in CWMUs was to approve the remainder of the CWMU management plan and permit numbers and landowner association numbers. That passed unanimous. The dedicated hunter amendment rules, we had one motion there was to approve R 657-38 dedicated hunter rule as presented. That passed 5-1, one opposed. Moving on into waterfowl, there was a lot of discussion up there, and I think you guys had that here on the electric bikes. But they covered waterfowl in one motion, and it was to accept the 2019 waterfowl recommendation and rule amendments as presented, with the caveat that the electric bike be limited to a class one bike as defined by state and federal regulations. That passed. They talked about going to looking at the rotation of the waterfowl proclamation, and that'll be up in, I think, 3 years. They want to look and review this for the next 3 years, see how these electric bikes do, and then they'll reconsider that later on. The Flaming Gorge Reservoir Rule Amendment, one motion there was to approve the Flaming Gorge Rule Amendment as presented by the division, and that passed unanimous. Any questions?
Thank you, Randy. Appreciate it. Next will be the update from Justin.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome out to our Regional Advisory Council meeting. I just want to give a quick update on what's going on in the region, in the wildlife world. So let me just touch upon some of the highlights of each one of our sections. In our wildlife section, they are beginning to collect winter range condition information. We monitor the winter ranges and snow depth, temperatures, browse availability, animal condition, general animal condition, and use that information to make informed decisions when we if and when we need to do any emergency feeding. They're also starting to trap turkeys in Mendon using both walk-in traps and drop nets. If you'd like to get involved in that, please either get a hold of myself or Randy. We can make that happen. They'll be doing or participating in deer captures on the North Slope and the Cache probably in the next couple of weeks. And then we did start a cougar study on the Cache, and they collared three lions so far, and we'll continue to try to collar the target number of lions for that particular study. We will be trapping elk at Hardware Ranch for disease testing, and that will be the first part of December. So if you have interest in working on that effort, again, get a hold of myself or Randy. In our law enforcement section, we have a new officer in the Weber Davis district. His name is Brock Thornley, and he comes from the Lake Powell area. So we are just still one shy of full staff in law enforcement. Law enforcement liked the way the early deer hunt actually helped kind of spread out the hunter activity. They felt like it made their workload a little more manageable, and so they were saying kudos to the early deer hunt this year. In our habitat section, they're continuing to work on fire rehabilitation projects, primarily in the Grouse Creek area. Our aquatic section wanted to let everybody know that the whitefish spawn is starting now, and with that spawn, the fishing for whitefish at Bear Lake gets really, really good. So if you like to catch whitefish that are endemic to Bear Lake, it's a good time to go up and do that on the rocky shorelines. And then they also just wanted to indicate that right now they're in the report writing mode and just summarizing some of the field data they collected over the course of the summer. In our outreach section, we'll be having our elk festival at Hardware Ranch on December 8th, and then an ice fishing seminar December 18th at the Eccles Education Center at Farmington Bay. And then in our Great Salt Lake Ecosystem Program, they reported that ice is now starting to form on the freshwater marshes on the eastern shore of Great Salt Lake, and the brine shrimp industry has harvested a little over 22 million pounds of brine shrimp cysts, and that's not necessarily dry weight, it's just wet weight that comes off the lake, so they've still got to sort that to actually pull the cysts out and separate it from the debris. So that's all I have, unless there's questions.
What's the number of cougars that are going to be collared as a result of that study?
You know, I could probably have Darren come up and give a little, or Jim, do you know that information? Give a little bit of an update on what that project's all about and when it'll start, when it'll end.
Yeah, Jim Christensen, Cache District Wildlife Biologist. We're trying to collar and keep 7 to 10 female cougars collared through the life of this study.
And what's the purpose of the study?
So we're trying to get a better idea of home range sizes, give us a better idea of kill rates on deer. We're trying to link it up with the collared deer that we have now. Part of the study, too, is if we find one of these collared deer die and it was a cougar harvest or a cougar kill, we'll put a camera on it and then see what other scavenging takes place and the frequency of that and timing and everything there. Try and get a better idea of population size out of it as we learn more about home range sizes. And so just those are the main things, but try and learn all we can out of them. Lifespans, litter sizes, because we'll try and get in on these with new litters and get the kittens when they're first born and follow those through their lives also.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Justin, for that update. The meeting will proceed as follows. A representative from the division will make a presentation on an agenda item. Then we'll have questions from the public on the presentation. Questions only at this time. Next, we'll have questions from the council. Then we'll take comments from the public on the agenda item. Persons representing themselves will get 3 minutes. Persons representing an organization will get 5. Either case, fill out a blue card, and if you wish to comment, and bring it up to the front, and they will get it to us, because you have to have a blue card filled out in order to comment. Next, the council will comment on the agenda item. Then the council will make motions recommending action by the Wildlife Board on the agenda item. Deliberate those motions and vote. Council members who wish to abstain from voting will state their conflict, and then council members voting in opposition can provide their reasoning. So, that being said, we will move on to Darren with the 2019 Black Bear Recommendations and Rule Amendments.
Good evening, everybody. I'm glad to be here. Can you hear Jody okay? It doesn't sound like... Okay, I'll just keep talking. Yeah, I'll be presenting our recommendations for the 2019 Black Bear Rule changes and recommendations tonight. I wanted to start by just quickly reminding everybody how we manage black bears in Utah. First of all, the mission of the Division of Wildlife Resources to serve the people of Utah as a trustee and guardian of the state's wildlife. We actively manage black bear populations. That means that we actively manipulate populations across the state. And one of the key components of that management strategy is hunting. That's a key part of what we do. We've been managing black bears as protected species for about 51 years now. Those became protected in 1967. In the mid-80s and into the early 90s, we did quite a bit of research on bears in Utah. And based on that research, in 98 and 99, we wrote the first black bear management plan that spelled out how we were going to manage black bears and gave us some targets and management parameters to manage to. In 2011, that plan was updated, and so the current plan that we're operating off of was put into place in 2011. That plan is effective through 2023 with review periods during that time period. The goal of the plan is to maintain a healthy bear population in Utah. We want to keep bears in occupied habitat. In some cases, when bears expand to new habitats, we'll manage for that. and allow that to happen while we consider human safety, economic concerns, and other wildlife species in the process. We define a healthy bear population as one with a proportion of breeding age animals that will maintain population levels consistent with habitat and also maintain genetic variability. So that has something to do with connectivity between populations. They're able to, that genetic material gets passed through the population at large. So what does the Black Bear Management Plan say? First of all, in the plan, it is spelled out that we will manage bears on 3-year harvest recommendation cycles. And so we'll evaluate the harvest data, we make recommendations, we maintain those recommendations for 3 years, and then we reevaluate in the third year. That's what's written in the plan. And the reason that the plan spells this out is because black bears are long-lived, they're relatively slow reproducing. Sometimes bears can go for several years without having cubs. It has a lot to do with what habitat conditions are on the ground. And you don't need to be making adjustments every year. With a species like this, they kind of have a long-term, fairly stable population growth rate. And bears hibernate. They have this strategy to hibernate through the winter, so we don't usually see big weather-related losses, especially in winter. They are somewhat sensitive to drought, and especially things like mass production. If we have a failure of a berry crop or acorn crop, that tends to be the sort of thing that affects bears more than anything. But they're omnivores, and they're able to eat a lot of different things. Usually, in a lot of areas, the bottleneck is usually a nuisance issue, not necessarily an issue of population struggling biologically. So again, that's why the plan says that we should be doing this every 3 years. I won't go through this in great detail, just in the interest of time. But obviously, if the RAC or the people that are here tonight have questions, we can go into more detail. We manage bears on a unit-by-unit basis. We determine what our management strategy is going to be. And it needs to fall into one of three categories: light harvest, moderate harvest, or liberal harvest. And depending on where that unit, how that unit's managed, the parameters you see here in the chart are in effect, and those are the things we look at when we determine whether we're going to recommend changes in permits up or down. You can see that there are 4 units that are light, 6 units that are liberal, and the most of the units in the state fall under the moderate category. Light harvest is a unit where we don't have a lot of conflict, and we're going to go ahead and try to encourage bear populations to grow. Moderate is usually a maintaining or slightly or a little bit slower growing unit. Liberal harvest usually applies to units where we have a lot of conflict, primarily with livestock producers or even agricultural producers, where we're actually trying to keep a lid on populations and actually not let those populations get too big and cause us more problems. So, depending on how adult males in the harvest and the number of females in the harvest falls out, we make recommendations for permits based on those numbers. And so that's what you'll see tonight in our recommendations. We've looked at this. All of the recommendations fall within the parameters for the units that they're, depending on the unit and the harvest strategy. Another thing we did over the last year, we met this time last year, actually in January, with the Wildlife Board. There were a couple of issues that came up that the board asked us to go back and look at, one of which was the Book Cliffs and the La Salles and the San Juan units are the densest bear units in the state. That's where most of our black bears live. And as a result, they get a lot of attention in terms of hunting. And so they've got a little bit different season structure. And we had quite a bit of discussion in the board last year about those structures and dates. And the board asked us to go back and revisit those and just try to, we had some conflicts that we were trying to resolve. So we put together a black bear discussion group to tackle some of these questions. Some other things we talked about in the group was opportunities for spot and stalk hunting. Right now in the state, the most successful hunters are either using dogs to pursue bears or bait stations. They're hunting with baits in the field. There are a couple of, a spot and stalk hunt doesn't use either of those methods. So essentially you do just what it says. You have to spot the bear, you have to stalk the bear if you're going to hunt it that way. We have a couple of hunts, both on the La Salles and the San Juan, that where we currently do that. And so we talked about maybe expanding that to some other units. We also talked a little bit about bait stations and some of the registration requirements. We had some good discussions about non-resident pursuit. There have been some concerns about that. And we also invited some livestock representatives to talk about those angles. So these are just a few things we talked about in the group. And some of the recommendations tonight will reflect those discussions. This is a list of groups who were included in the discussion group. I won't read through them, but I think you can kind of look through there, just kind of get an idea of who was there and part of the discussions. So let's move on to some data from the last several years. Statewide success over the last 5 years has been right around 50%. Last year was down a little bit, but it seems to be in the 40 to 50% range. And you can also see the number of bears that were harvested over the last 5 years there from 2014 to 2018. If you put that into a graph, you can see here the red line are the number of bears that have been taken over time. This is since 1990. And then the yellow line are the number of permits that have been issued over time. One thing that I wanted to point out here is if you look at 2011, that was when the new bear management plan went into place. And you can see that three-year cycle. We made a recommendation. It stayed flat, and then we made more recommendations on that third year, and you saw some adjustment. That actually represents some of that spot and stalk opportunity on the La Salles. We've gotten away from that a little bit the last few years, and that's due to a lot of different factors. But sometimes we just can't leave things alone, and we want to try to tinker with things every year, and so that pattern has changed a little bit. One other thing that we look at is we try to estimate our adult black bear population using a population reconstruction model. So we've talked about this before in terms of mountain lions and bears, but you can get a minimum population based on your harvest, because when you have a bear in hand, we estimate the age. We know if it's 5 years old when it's harvested, it was alive and it was four years old the year before. And you can back calculate a minimum population estimate that way. The really important thing here is the trend. I wouldn't get too caught up on the numbers, because again, this is a minimum, and if there's any kind of natural mortality, that would actually move the line up and the estimate would be higher. So this is just based on hunting mortality. But the overall trend has been a growing population since about 2008. It looks like our population's probably stabilized over the last 3 years and starting to kind of flatten out. And that may reflect some of the drought conditions we're seeing in parts of the state, especially in those units that have a lot of bears. The other thing that we consider when we make recommendations are when bears and people come into conflict. And so this chart just shows we have a fund, and we do compensate livestock producers for damage up as long as we can verify that the bear did the damage, and up to a fixed amount, up to a budget amount. But this just kind of shows where the hot spots are throughout the state. So what you're seeing here, the bars represent the amount of damage payments that the division made, and then you have the counties along the bottom there. So, you know, San Pete really stands out, Carbon, and then Utah and Wasatch. Those are some of the big counties for livestock damage. When we do have livestock damage, we like to try to, if we need to remove bears, we like to give sportsmen the opportunity to do that. And so this graph just shows the red line are the number of bears that are removed by the Federal Wildlife Services agents. And the yellow line are the number of animals. This is the same line that you saw earlier for the bear harvest. Basically, what I'm trying to show is that when we do have growing bear populations, sportsmen get additional opportunity, and the federal take remains fairly consistent over time. So on to recommendations. The first thing we're recommending tonight is that we get back, as per the plan, to a three-year recommendation cycle for all the reasons that I mentioned before. And so the recommendations we're making tonight will then be for 2019 through 2021. The proposal will be these recommendations would remain in place, and we wouldn't change them until 2021. And we'd come back before the RACs at that point after we evaluate the next 3 years worth of data. We are pointing out, I want to point out, there is a safety valve here, and we do this with upland game. If there's a biological emergency, we see a problem with hunt strategies that where we're affecting the bear population in a way we don't intend, we can midstream bring those concerns to the board and to the RACs, and changes can be made midstream. We also have, in a very dire and time-limited situations, the director of the Division of Wildlife can do an emergency closure on a hunt. And so those things will still be the case. And depending on the board and RACs, druthers, we could still come back and do some informational stuff midstream, too, if people want to just know how things are going. But these recommendations tonight are for the next 3 years, and that's what we're asking the RAC to vote on. So the next recommendation I want to give just a little bit of background on. This graph shows the number of resident applications for bear permits versus the number of permits that have been available. So the yellow line here, it gets really flattened out because it's so much smaller than the demand. The yellow line are the number of permits that have been available over time. If you remember back to one of those earlier graphs, you know that graph has gone up. But the red line is the number of people who apply for those permits. And you can see those lines are diverging over time. We're increasing interest. People want to go hunt bears, but the permits aren't there and they're not available. And we're starting to see more and more points necessary, bonus points necessary in order to draw those tags. And so this is one thing that we discussed as part of the group. This is the same graph for non-residents, but it shows the same pattern. And so one way you can try to offer a little bit more opportunity for permits is by offering an opportunity that has lower success. And so we're proposing on several units tonight some fall spot and stock only permits. So there are a couple of different ways we're going to try this. On some units, we're actually offering a number of permits that people would draw, and then they'd be the only people that could hunt those units. The season would be beginning at the opening of the general muzzleloader deer season. And that would run through the end of the any weapon rifle season. So it's kind of a fall window. The thinking here is that if people are out hunting deer or elk and they want to try to draw a bear permit and hunt a bear while they're in the field, they could do that. The other way we're doing it, same season, is to try a more of a quota system so that on some units We'll have a number of bears that can be taken, and then the hunt will shut down. In that case, whoever wants to buy a permit, harvest objective permit, can do that over the counter. They can hunt that unit, but once the number of bears are taken in the quota, then the unit would shut down. So we're going to try both, and we'll see over this next 3 years how that works out and which one seems to work better. One thing that we need to change in order to do this is there is a late fall hunt that begins in early November, so November 2nd. Currently, you can start placing baits in the field 2 weeks before that opening date. Well, that overlaps with these fall spot and stock seasons. And so we're proposing that that early bait period be eliminated for that late season. That way you're not tempted to hunt over bait on a spot and stock permit. That would then be a bait hunt. And so so we're proposing that we eliminate that 2 week. So for that late season, you wouldn't be able to bait early. You could place baits beginning November 2nd. And not a lot of people use bait that time of year anyway. So I don't think that'll be a huge problem. And finally, just to give you a feel for success rates, on the San Juan and the Les Salles, where we've had these opportunities for the last several years, success runs between 10 and 15%. Those are units with very dense bear numbers. So I'd anticipate on units with fewer bears, we may see a little bit less. So something similar to archery success rates with big game is what we anticipate. The next recommendation, you all have hunt tables. We haven't made any changes to seasons except for these that I note here. So all the other seasons are essentially just being adjusted for the calendar. But on the book cliffs, we're proposing that we eliminate the archery only season that's been in place, and that we open a fall season that begins the first Saturday in August and runs through November 14th. But that it'll be closed to the use of dogs between the opening of a limited entry archery elk season through October 1st. So there's kind of a window in the middle of that season where you couldn't use dogs. This is directly out of our discussions in the Black Bear discussion group. This gives people who want to hunt with dogs a couple of extra weeks early in August to hunt that unit. This is a very desirable unit for people who want to hunt bears. And so this is kind of a compromise season that the group agreed to and came up with. And then the other change we're recommending is on the La Salle and San Juan, we're going to maintain that spot and stock season, but we're going to actually make it mirror. It was a little different season than the ones we're proposing tonight. We just want to make that the same, so it would open the same as all the other spot and stock hunts and end on the same date. Moving on to specific permit recommendations. Beginning in the northeastern region, changes are in green. And so rather than maybe in the interest of time going through each and every one of these, what I've done is I've noted how many draw permits are available and how many quota, they're not permits, but what quotas might be. And the way these usually shake out is usually quotas are fall seasons. Permits are available for the bait hunt. We usually don't do a harvest objective we don't do harvest objective during bait seasons, because then you'd have a mob all wanting to set up a bait. And just in general, that's how it goes. Just to point out, on the North Slope, Three Corners, West Daggett, this is one of those units where they're offering a spot and stock quota in the fall during those dates we talked about. It'd be an additional two quota. And then on the Bonanza Diamond Mountain, that'd be a quota of three spot and stock. And then nine additional permits on the Bookcliffs Bitter Creek South. And that's just an adjustment based on the plan. Some changes in the northern region. We had some discussions with our group about tools we could use to help landowners, private landowners that are experiencing bear damage. And we're making this proposal to try to try to see if this will work for some of these private land units. So there used to be two bear hunting units in the northern region. We've split it into three, and what we've done is we've taken the private land units, Chalk Creek, East Canyon, and Morgan South Ridge, and made them one unit and offered six harvest objective permits. We want to take six bears under harvest objective, and then nine permits. Five of those permits would be spot and stock in the fall. The quotas would be for the spring bear hunt and the fall bear hunt, split between those two, three on each of those seasons. The other two units, nine permits on the Cache Ogden and Camas North Slope Summit would have 26, five of which on both of those units would be spot and stock. Just informationally, this does affect a conservation permit. Currently, there's a conservation permit for the Chalk Creek Camas North Slope Summit, and so this would remove Chalk Creek from that permit, and we'll be talking with the conservation group and the board and see how they want to, if they want to approve that, how they'd like to do that. So if the RAC has any suggestions, we'd be happy to entertain that as well. Central region, 20 spot and stock permits on the Nebo, and an additional two permits, just regular permits, on the Wasatch West Central. Southeastern region, 20 spot and stock permits on the Central Mountains North Manti, 20 on the Central Mountains South and San Rafael North unit, and 10 spot and stock quota. So this is one of these where you can go buy a permit and hunt it, and once the quota is filled, it closes on the 9 mile. The spot stock permits on the LaSalle and San Juan are the same as they were last year. That's why they're not green. Changes on the southern region, two fewer permits on the Beaver, an additional two on the Dutton, an additional three on the Panguitch Lake Zion, one more permit on the Ponsagant, 20 spot stock permits on the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, and two additional permits on the Plateau Fish Lake. So those are season and permit recommendations. Now we'll move on to some recommendations for some rule changes. The first of which, we have in some areas of the state, primarily in the southeastern part of the state, a lot of crop damage that's caused by black bears. They get into sunflowers, they get into melons, and we're proposing that we change the language. Currently, a landowner could get a damage permit to try to remove that bear. Usually with bears, if you have a bear that's in conflict and you can remove that individual animal, that will usually solve your problem. And so landowners have been able to get a permit to do that. We're recommending that they, in addition to the landowner, that they can designate a person to help them with that, to give that permit. This is similar to what we do with lions for livestock damage. So it just says a landowner lessee or their designee may be issued a control permit to if they're experiencing chronic crop depredation. The second recommendation we're making has to do with hunting hours, legal hunting hours. We've had some concerns on some of these, especially these really popular units, and some confusion about what's legal during off hours when people shouldn't be hunting. And so we're proposing that we add a definition, first of all, that dogs may not be rigged from 1/2 hour after sunset to 1/2 hour before sunrise, except during the summer pursuit season when dogs can be rigged beginning at 5 a.m. So that's basically all of those. A dog can't be rigged outside of legal hunting hours. And we define rigging as, rig means to have trained dogs placed outside of a dog box, kennel, or crate while being transported in or on a motorized vehicle for the purposes of locating or pursuing bears. We're proposing modifying the firearms and archery portion of the rule to match the changes that were just made with the big game rule for air bows. So we're just making those changes. Those just passed for big game. We clarified some language in the rule about dog handlers and on closed pursuit units, this was an effort to make it more clear. If you have a dog that separates during a pursuit, who can go retrieve that dog and try to make it more clear for people so they can understand what's legal and what's not. And I think we're in a good place on that. We added a word to our language about starting dogs off of a bait station. So we added language to clarify that a person may not intentionally start rig dogs at a registered bait station or take with dogs a bear lured to a bait station. The key change there is intentionally. Sometimes you don't have any idea there's a bait station and your dogs pick up a bear track and they start chasing, and all of a sudden they're at the bait station and you didn't intend to do that. So it's illegal if you intentionally do it. If you don't do it intentionally, then we try to give a little bit of wiggle room there. We also removed some language clarifying where baits cannot be placed. Currently, and this isn't changing, you cannot place a bait within 100 yards of water, a public road or designated trail, or within a half a mile of a permanent dwelling or a campground. There was also a third call out in the rule, and it was a little bit vague. It just said, or any place that the division deems could possibly be a conflict. We found that, first of all, the 100 yards and half mile seemed to be sufficient. We didn't have to use that third category. And we always worry a little bit out in rule about leaving things vague. And so this is very cut and dried, black and white, where you cannot place a bait. And we're removing the language about has someone make a judgment call. We modified the check-in part of the rule. The rule currently says that you can check in you have to check your bear in within a given time period for a permanent tag. And currently it says you can do that at a regional office or with a CO, a conservation officer. In practice, we don't, biologists will do that as well. And so we just changed that to say you can check it in at a regional office or with a division representative, just to make that consistent with what we are already doing. And we're also going to be requiring the exact location of kill when bears are checked in. Bear hunters will have to provide where that bear was taken to us when they check it. And that's all I've got.
I'm sure there might be a question or two, so you might want to stick around. Questions from the public on the presentation?
Long time no
Every
see.
Every time. I'm short. Oh, I can still wiggle it. I'm really loud anyway. Darren can hear me.
That's
I'm giving
right.
the eye. So I was looking on your graph with population growth where it's kind of tapered off.
You
want to
state your name? Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I'm Sierra Nelson with the Utah Wool Growers Association. Poor Darren has to deal with me on a regular basis. Feel for the man. Send him cookies. I see where your graph on it's where it's tapered off for population. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't address the fact that we're still at three times the level that we're at.
Right.
I mean, and we're hoping that with adding additional hunts and adding a little bit more that maybe we can kind of get that population to drop a little, but it didn't really specify, so I'm wondering if you could clarify for me.
I think, so that's a statewide estimate, Sierra.
Right.
So statewide it looks like it's leveling off. But on specific units, especially those that are managed under a liberal strategy and those units where we've got livestock concerns, we'll be making recommendations to address those concerns.
We'd appreciate
that.
Does that
help?
I feel
yeah,
for the
sure.
Mellon guys, too.
Thanks.
Any other questions from the public? Questions from the RAC?
Go ahead.
Hi, Darren. I have a few. Just to clarify, so we're now requiring a GPS location when they check in a bear?
We're going to require drainage? Initially, what we'll do is when you check the bear, we'll send an email out to people that are hunting bears saying, hey, when you check your bear in, we're going to ask you where you took it. So make sure you record that somehow. And when you check it in, we'll have to help hunters tell us where that, and we'll write down the GPS coordinates. So if you know on a map, or you've got it on your phone, we'll just do that when we check it in. There are protections for that data. It'd be the same as it would be for coyotes, where that's information that won't be given to the general public and wouldn't show up on a map or anything on our website. If anything, we might present a heat map, but we'll keep those locations secure so that the people are comfortable letting us know where they do that.
I think it's great. You said that they're making some changes to the law about retrieving dogs, and I reviewed that, and mm-hmm. I couldn't see where they made it. Like, I seen some quotes that were read or something, but
yeah.
And you and I have talked about this, right. But I can't see where it's
the problem was that the guidebook defined it differently than the rule did, and so what we've done, the guidebook was a little bit more, and we've had this discussion, but it was had a little more flexibility, and so we made the rule reflect what the guidebook said. So if you've got a dog
that leaves,
so last
year's guidebook, it'll read the same.
That was the change. Yeah.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that's great. Okay. why the change to the rigging rule?
We've had a couple of concerns. One is that, and this is primarily from houndsmen hunting, like Bookcliffs is probably the main one, but LaSalle's and San Juan as well, that they feel like the playing field isn't totally level because there's some gray area about what it means to be hunting bears. And so we're trying to make it a little bit more black and white so everybody understands what the rules are. The intent here is that during non-hunting hours, that people aren't driving the roads all night waiting to get a track and then camping out on a canyon mouth. And then the next guy comes along and thinks that he can't be hunting yet, and, oh, wait, I got here and someone's already camped. So this is an attempt to try to make that a little bit more black and white. I think the key in the language here is that you have to be doing that in pursuit of a bear. And so the burden would still fall on the division to prove that you were actually. So for example, you get a dog that separates from the pack. It's out all night or it's out late and you finally pick it up and you throw it on your four-wheeler. You don't have a box and you head back to camp. You're not pursuing a bear, so this wouldn't apply. That dog isn't rigged as per the definition, the way that it reads now. That's
our exact conversation we had.
Right, exactly.
To follow up on that, I don't see where the rule separates that.
Right.
Maybe you can explain the change, because
right.
the way the rigging definition is up is it says if you're in pursuit of a bear, but... I'm going to keep it a question, but if you're out hunting before or after hours and a dog's up in rigging condition, oh, that's it. But how does an officer prove that?
Yeah.
I mean, how does this rule help him prove it one way or another? The dog could be inside the box,
right.
And they could be hunting.
Right, yeah.
So how does this help law enforcement, I guess, is my question. How does it clarify anything?
Right. I think what we're trying to do here... So the intent is that people aren't hunting bears outside of legal hunting hours. And so this is an attempt to try to clarify what we mean by that. We had this discussion last night. I know that the houndsmen are I don't want to steal their thunder. But, I'd be open to, and I think it'd be really helpful if the RAC wants to tackle this to maybe suggest... if your concern is about the language, we could certainly address that. I think if this wasn't in here, it's still legal hunting hours, and it, it's It's kind of a distinction without a difference, but we thought we'd try to just make spell it out so everybody was on the same page with what was allowed and what wasn't allowed. But you're right, it's hard to make anything perfect, and so there's a certain amount of gray area.
What, and I'm not blaming anybody, but why wasn't this brought up at the committee meeting? Did law enforcement fail to bring it up? I mean, I'm not blaming you, but this right. was never discussed at the committee meeting.
You're right,
it just
yeah, the committee,
showed up in the rack.
The committee didn't talk about it. You're right.
Okay. Yeah. If a hunter is selective, meaning he waits all season, and he only, you know, he chooses to just kill a trophy bear, can that skew your data?
It shouldn't writ large. So if you look at it, you know, across the 3-year data frame, and you know, that's one of the reasons why we're recommending that we don't make recommendations every year that we let that data. And we do that now, but somehow we've gotten into doing this every year. We really should let things be the same over time.
Agreed.
Yeah, that it reflects what's in the field, and I don't think, you know, there's enough people that'll take the first bear they get that it shouldn't do that.
So we're going to this 3-year plan. Well, in 2011, when it was written, we went to a 3-year plan, and we've gotten off track. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that's due to turnover.
Yeah.
And so now we're kind of in a 5-year cycle. This last 5 years.
Right. Yeah.
You started off the presentation saying we shouldn't adjust numbers every year.
Right.
Why have we adjusted them last year, and why are we adjusting them this year?
Yeah, I think
the plan doesn't say to do that. And in your own words, you said you shouldn't.
Yeah. The only answer I have for that, Aaron, is that you know now's the time to get back on track. You know, you can kind of see we've definitely had a growing. We feel like we've definitely had a growing bear population, and we're above where we have been in the past. The permit recommendations have been made according to what we've seen in the harvest, and I don't have any concerns about that. So we're recommending that we get back to it this year.
And I'm all for that, but isn't it a fair argument that we shouldn't adjust tags every year because it can negatively affect the population?
Right.
But yet you've done that. This will
be,
I think, the third year in a row.
Yeah, we have. And
that's
it's due,
not what the plan says.
It's partly due to turnover in this position. You know, we get new people in and they don't realize where they are in the cycle. It's a little bit due to other groups have come in and said, hey, you know, we're not happy with this. We want to change things now. And so we've gotten off track, and we're recommending we get back on track.
On the book cliffs, all in favor of a lot of the increases or, mm-hmm. you know, for the opportunity hunts. But the book cliffs has the largest percentage increase of all the units mm-hmm. if you take out the spot and stock.
Right.
Like it's in its own category, like it's in a different state. Why such a large increase there when the rest of the state, you were very conservative?
Right. So the book cliffs had about 50% adult males. It's a moderate unit. So it was above objective on adult males in a good direction. And it was, I could look, but it was low on adult females. And so the plan says you should adjust permits between 20 and 40%. 20% is 11 additional permits, and 40% is 23. And so they're kind of in the middle of that range. And so that's why they also have some concerns. They've seen a lot of cause-specific mortality to adult does from lions on the book cliffs. And we're actually, part of this lion study is to look on those units that have bears, if bears are increasing a lion's kill rate by stealing the kill. People have postulated that. There's been some theories about that, but I don't think there's any good hard data on it yet. But that is a concern we have on the book cliffs. It seems like the average adult doe survival throughout the state is about 80% on average. You know, if you get a hard winter, it's different. But, you know, overall, it's about 80%. On the book cliffs, it's 64%. And it's primarily due to lion impacts. And so we're kind of trying to tease that apart. We've got a really big study starting. So not only are we collaring lions and bears, we've got deer collared and elk collared and bison collared. And we're trying to figure out what those dynamics are. But those are some things that went into that.
Why wasn't this this large increase brought up at the?
We didn't talk about permits in the committee. We hadn't gotten to that point yet. We didn't have the data yet.
Okay. I think I'll save the rest for the comments. I appreciate it. Thanks, Darren.
Sure. Thanks.
Randy, you have a question?
Yeah, some of that was covered, but a couple questions I had for you. What on the change on the rigging? Mm-hmm. Not a houndsman, but I understand the concept. Right. I bird hunt a lot. How big of a problem is it? You've specified a particular area. Is it a known problem, a big problem, or is it?
It seems like the places that where we hear the complaints are on those sort of premier units, the units that have a lot of bears, like the Book Cliffs, the La Salles, the San Juan, don't hear much complaining in general from many of the other bear units. It's just that's where everybody wants to go, and you always have to strike a balance between, hey, it's public land and it's the mountain, and we all need to get along and share the backcountry, and maybe trying to tweak some things so that people at least understand what the rules are and everybody's playing off the same rule book. So that was the attempt.
Okay. Hey, are there any ideas what type of citations are being issued now, if any?
What would the citation be for hunting outside illegal hours? Those of you with badges? That's what it would be, right?
David, Lieutenant for Northern Region here. Is this a question, the fine?
Well, I'm just wondering, are these complaints from other hunters or other people using the area? Or is this something that's actually happening and that we're currently citing people? I'm assuming it'd be poaching if they're hunting outside of hours.
It would be. It'd be an attempt to unlawfully take wildlife. And, I mean, there are restitutional values for bear, and I don't remember off the top of my head.
And this is just to prevent you from going down the wrong direction. I don't care about the dollar amount. I'm wondering if there are people actually cited for poaching
in the northern
in this bear in these no. bear areas.
Yeah. They have had a few cases, and as Aaron pointed out, it can sometimes be difficult because even with the current language, you'd have to prove that the person was pursuing a bear, was attempting to pursue a bear. And that, again, is a burden on the division. We'd have to make that case. And, does that help?
Okay. It does. Right. And my last one is off that subject. And I was kind of new to the board, just a little over mm-hmm. a year. So the comment came up that it's been changed every year for multiple years.
Yeah.
What makes this the magic? Not being rude,
it's
but
no,
what makes this the magic year that it will go through?
It's just one of those. It's you know, you go through the planning, say, wait a minute, we're off track, and we need to get back on track. And so this is the year that we decided to that we realized that and said, hey, you know, we shouldn't be. There's one thing I didn't mention in the presentation. I meant to is one concern you have with increasing permits annually is that you can mask your population estimate because it. I think Aaron alluded to this a little bit. The calculation assumes that you have a constant harvest pressure, and it's I don't think that that's happened in our estimation, but it can happen. It fools the model into thinking there are more bears out there than there are because you're increasing pressure, and you shouldn't be doing that. Biologically, that's a bad practice, and so we really do need to keep things consistent in order to use this population trend estimate effectively. So that's another concern.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He'll pinky promise he won't do it next year. Question: what's the difference between driving around the Ponsagon all night with a light, looking at deer, or just driving around with a dog in your truck at night, as long as you're not hunting? I mean, I'm just asking the question, what's the difference?
I know, you know, there are rules against spotlighting and I can't remember the exact language in the rule, but if you're casting a light and attempting to locate wildlife, you know, there are some rules against doing that. This is similar. I think the biggest, maybe an even more analogous thing came up last night. You know, is it okay to hike into your tree stand before light? Are you hunting? And you know, we would say no. And so, again, if your dogs are out on the truck and you're driving up the road, but you're not actively trying to locate a bear track, then you're not rigged according to this definition. And so I think admittedly it doesn't change what the current rule is very much. It just tries to define what we mean and let everybody know what we'll be looking at. But you'd still have the burden of proof, even without this language, is that you can't hunt outside of legal hours. And so we're just trying to define what it means to be hunting.
Okay.
And this is our attempt to do that.
I'm sorry, I thought of one more thing.
Sure.
What is the current definition?
Currently, it just, let me read it to you. This is what the rule currently says. Bear may not be taken or pursued only between 1/2 hour before official sunrise through 1/2 hour after official sunrise. And we added, dogs may not be rigged during that time period, during those off hours. So, that wouldn't change. You still can't pursue or take a bear outside of legal hunting hours.
Chris.
Randy, what's the target population that the bear management plan manages to for this statewide?
We don't have, unlike big game, we don't have a population objective. And so we manage within these parameters that I showed you on the plan. And so if we get outside of those in a negative way for bear populations, then we would reduce tags. If the numbers look good, then we offer more opportunity. But we're not shooting for a population cap or a minimum in the plan.
Do you have any data on the success rate for spot and stalk hunts?
It's on the La Salle and San Juan, it runs between 10 and 15%. Those are units with a lot of bears. And so some of these units would probably be in the 10% or less range. So it's a low success hunt. It's more of an opportunity. But again, people can choose whether they want to try that or not.
So is there a concern with the 10 to 15% success rate that it's going to have the effect of trimming the success rate from later on the calendar established hunts?
I don't think so. It hasn't done that on the La Salles and the San Juan. It's just, again, just kind of an extra opportunity for someone to hunt a bear under a different sort of methodology, I guess.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Kevin.
So if I have a bear permit for a spot and stalk, and it's in that time frame from September 25th to October 25th, and I'm hunting muzzleloader deer, what's the weapon restriction for the bear?
There aren't any legal weapon for bears, so you can shoot it with a muzzleloader if that's what you're hunting.
What if I'm hunting a bear, I see a bear and I go after it, but I've got a
muzzleloader deer tag.
Am I legally allowed to carry a rifle?
Yeah, the restriction on weapon type would trump. So if you're hunting a bear during the muzzleloader hunt, you're not allowed to have a center fire firearm to hunt deer. And so that would be the thing that you'd have to use.
Okay.
Question or just a comment?
Question.
Question. I'll wait for comment.
Okay. No more questions. We're going to go to the comments. We've only got two. We've got two so far, so if you want to make a comment, fill out a blue card. First one's Tyler Farr, representing the Utah Houndsman Association.
Hello. So I'm Tyler Farr, Vice President of the Houndsman Association, and I was asked to read you the letter of our recommendations. I'm sure all of you have been emailed it, if you've looked at it or not. So, the Utah Houndsman Association supports the DWR's bear hunting recommendations with the exception of the following two changes. The UHA does not support the 9-tag increase on the Book Cliffs Bitter Creek South unit. The UHA proposes a 0-tag increase on the Book Cliffs unit. The UHA requests that the 9-tag increase proposed by the DWR be taken from the spring hound season allotment. The UHA believes that the bear population of the Book Cliffs is stable or declining. The bear plan allows for a 20 to 40% increase in tags. 9-tag is a 30% increase. The plan allows for a 0% increase, which with the dissolving of the archery-only fall hunt. 7 tags were scattered across the spring, summer, and fall hunts. This archery-only hunt had a very low success rate. Thus, the shifting of the 7 tags is in essence a 7-tag increase already. The 7-tag shifting, coupled with the fact that the state is suffering from a drought and a low cub den survival rate this past year, we feel it is best to be conservative with the tag increase. If you remove the Spalton stock hunt tag increase, the Book Cliffs is the only unit in the state with this aggressive of an increase. If you remove the Spalton stock hunt tag increase, all the other units saw a zero increase in a tag reduction. The recommendation, our second one, would be the UHA does not support the proposed changes to the rule 657-33. The rule prohibits transporting hounds in rigging position outside of legal hunting hours. The UHA supports the current rule law that prohibits hunting, chasing bears outside the legal hunting hours. The UHA feels the new rule goes too far. What happens to a hunter on a UTV or ATV with no box, headed to camp after hours and with dogs on the rig platform as there is no other place for them to ride? What happens if you find a lost hound and to avoid it fighting with your other hounds, you place it outside the box on the rig and drive to camp before and after hours? The UHA supports the law enforcement section in their endeavors to enforce all the current laws and rules. This rule is not enforceable. The UHA would like to thank all those that participated in the bear committee meeting and letting us be able to be a part of this. Thanks.
Thank you, Tyler. The next one we have is Sierra Nelson representing the Utah Wool Growers Association.
So, thanks again for letting me address you guys about this. We would like to support the recommendations from the division. We especially really appreciate the efforts that you've made to make it so that we can have designees for these landowner tags. That really would help us out. We would encourage you to continue to move forward trying to decrease the overall bear population. Our goal isn't to not have any bears, it's to decrease the amount of conflict between bears and livestock. We know that sheep aren't their natural food source. So if we can separate them and keep them from learning that sheep are an easy food source, that helps us. And we feel like a decrease in the overall numbers statewide, and especially in some of these problem areas, would help us out with that, where we are at 3 times the level that we're normally at. So we would encourage you to keep up adding more tags or extending seasons or whatever it is so that we can have a higher percentage of take so that we can have this separation between the two. So thanks much for working on it. Echoing the helmsman, though, I didn't even think about not having a box and coming home at night, but that did kind of make sense to me, that maybe there could be some room in the rule for adjustment on rigging coming back at night if you just flat out didn't have a box because you couldn't afford it. So I don't know how to do that or what you would do with that, but food for thought. Thanks.
Thank you. No other comments from the public? Go back to comments from the rack. Mike.
On the rigging, I guess my only comment would be it just seems like a nightmare to enforce. You're on a, you know, you have a designated travel plan. You can travel these dirt roads with no restrictions. You know, it's 2 in the morning. It's 5 in the morning. You're legal to be there. Proving that you were hunting bear unless you were unloaded and turning dogs loose seems to be a very difficult task. I just wanted to put that out there.
Thank you. I agree.
I'll echo that, Mike. Bear dogs can rig outside the box, so this doesn't help at all. It won't help at all. What do we do to the coon hunters? It's legal to hunt all night long and rig coons. They're not protected. We called some district attorneys across the state, and I don't know if there's a representative from the Attorney General's office. Not one of the district attorneys said that they could enforce this law. Everyone can beat the citation. We support the law enforcement endeavors, and the current law says you don't hunt before or after hours. And we support that 100%. But this gives law enforcement a lot of leeway trying to decide if they're hunting. The problem is, I think the complaints arise from people getting up at 3 and 4 in the morning and trying to be first to the road to hunt. Some duck hunters do that. They want to be first to the blind. Some deer hunters do that. This is an effort to kind of, because someone drives out and parks at the bottom of a canyon and his dogs are barking and then he was there first. And man, I don't know what the answer is, but I promise that this law isn't going to help. I have an ATV, and the example that Darren brought up, I asked him. I have a dog box too, but if I hike out of the canyon at 7 p.m. from a tree and I put my dogs in rigging position, because that's all there is, I'm at the mercy of that officer to decide if I'm rigging or not. And I'm just headed to camp. And so I don't want to be put in that position. I don't want any hunter to be put in that position. I think that this rule should be taken to the committee, and they should come up with some way to try to reduce these complaints and or get a different rule to help them. Because I'm all for catching the cheaters. I mean, we want that 100%. But this isn't going to help. This is going to hurt more law-abiding people than do any good. If I can keep going, I'll talk about the book cliffs. The book cliffs are personal to me. I spend every spring out there. I have a journal that I've kept with some of the greatest houndsmen in the West. Some of them come down from Oregon. I know that they can't bear hunt up there, but my friend can, because he's a government hunter up there, and I hunt with other people. And I've kept a journal in the log of every bear that we've caught, the color, the sex, the dogs that were there. And I don't think the bear population is growing out there. I called several outfitters that outfoot on the book cliffs. One of our hound members, Guy Webster, he challenges any outfitter in the state to prove that they spent more time behind the binoculars or spotting scope than him on the book cliffs this year. He literally was there 7 days a week, him or his son or his wife or his son-in-law, operating an outfitting business. Every fall he sees 20 to 30 bears. He saw zero this year, and he saw two tracks. They're declining. It was so bad this spring that he packed up camp and left. And I get it, it's different from season to season. But the last three or four seasons, there's no bears out there. Now, the data says we're killing good boars, and that's why I tried to bring it up in the question section. If you hunt really, 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 really hard in an area with very few bears, you can still find a big one. And then the plan, and I don't know what the right answer is, says, well, the bear population must be increasing because you killed a big bear and not a sow. And so the division, and I know that they do this, they have to look at that and kind of take it into consideration. The numbers, no offense, Darren, we sat on the phone, and when I was in high school a long time ago, I was in every advanced math class there was, and I cannot make the numbers that you've given us make sense. And I don't want to get into it, but just on the book cliffs, last spring there was 26 tags, then there was 9, 9, and 6. Now it's 40, 10, 10, and I think 6. Basically, even with expo tags, it's a 13 increase, and it goes back several years that way. Last year's numbers, this is from the packet they sent us, were recommending 860 permits. That's an increase of 102. This year they said they gave 829 permits. So last year they said they gave 860, but this year they said they only gave 829. It didn't go to the Wildlife Board or the RAC with a 31 tag reduction. In fact, the 860 would be and expo tags. And I'm not blaming anybody, but these tag numbers just don't add up. But what does add up is there's another 145 tags this year. So that's 250 almost. That's 14% and 18%. That's 32% with a previous biologist saying we have a 5% increase in bear population on average throughout the years. I think it's declining because of the drought. The San Juan LaSalle's had zero cub survival, not 1%, zero cub survival. Their biologists recommended a reduction. A few miles away, they're increasing it by my math, 30, by his math, 18. Just depends on which numbers you use. It just doesn't make sense to increase these all. Now, with that said, the houndsmen are trying to get along, and we support these new spot and stock hunts. It's going to create a lot of opportunity. 90% of the houndsmen in this state are ready to freaking storm the castle. They're upset at our Houndsman Association because we're trying to cooperate and go along with what the division proposes. It's hard to swallow a horse pill so large when their own words are, we shouldn't increase every year, but we have the last three. I thought you said that tonight. Now, we're not saying don't increase any. That's what all the houndsmen want, zero increase. Keep the numbers the same as they were last year. Thank you, Darren. It took us 5 years instead of three to get the book cliffs changed. It's not what we wanted. It was voted at the Wildlife Board to change it and then voted back. That was like a comedy show down there last year at the Bear Committee, if anybody witnessed it. We really respect what you've done. We're for the three-year cycle. We want to lock these numbers in. It's impossible to justify such a large increase on the book cliffs, on the premium hunting ways, because you're going to kill a lot more than, and then the rest of the state is such a small, I mean, some of them are decreasing because of the bear population, but on this one unit, and so it came up in the central rack last night, why? They texted the biologist, and his guess is that bears are killing fawns. Well, that's not a reason. My guess, which in my opinion is just as valuable as his, is the bear population is declining. I called Hal Meekham. He's hunted the book cliffs longer than anybody probably here is alive. I asked, how many fawns have you found killed by bears out there? Hal hunted on some of them ridges when there wasn't roads. He's found one fawn that a bear killed in 50 years hunting out there. I promise if that was a problem, he would have found more. I was with him when he found it. And we found one calf out. Now, I know bears kill a few. But for the biologist to say through a text message, well, the reason we have to increase it so much is because bears are killing fawns and have no evidence whatsoever. That's not right. That's just, I need to have a reason. I'm going to pull something out of their hat. And correct me if I'm not wrong, Darren. That's what happened at the Central Rack meeting. So the division's excuse for this increase is fawns with no proof of it. It's just not right. That being said, the two recommendations by the Hound Association, sportsmen, are more than fair. And to be quite honest, if we were following the bear management plan, we'd make a motion to have zero increases of tags. So that's all I have to say. I intend on making a motion on those when the time comes up. But if anyone has any questions about the rigging rule, the tag increases, the numbers, I brought the guidebooks. We can look through them, and we can prove that the numbers presented are not the same here. And I'm not trying to call anybody out. I'm not calling Darren out. But it's hard to swallow a pill this big when the data's not right. Amen.
Thank you. Any other comments? I guess my question is when you talked about the bear at this central rack saying that he thought it was the fawns, I mean, isn't the increase solely based on the management plan and the numbers? Just for clarification.
I assume you want me to...
Yeah.
Okay. The fawns didn't come up last night. That's not... We were here just talking about adult doe mortality, and it's specifically lions. And the part that we need to find out more about, I think it's fair to say, Aaron, is whether bear stealing cougar kills contributes to increased cougar take. I think we don't have the answer to that. So, but we weren't talking about bears killing fawns last night.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Darren.
At least that's not what was presented from the... It was one of the RAC members that was
texting. I know which RAC member it was, and I talked to him.
And what he stated in the meeting didn't have anything to do with fawns. Whether they texted that or not, I don't know. I didn't see the text.
Well, I can tell you what was texted to him and presented, and you were there too, and I don't want to mix words, right. But a motion was made to only have a 2-tag increase on the book clips.
Yeah. I think, too, regardless, according to the plan, that based on the number of adult male bears and the number of females in the harvest, those permits should have been increased between 20% and 40%. If you include the 7, I think that's a fair argument. The 7 archery tags are about 17% success. That still falls within that range, between 11 and 23 permits, and so they made that recommendation. They're within the parameters on the plan.
No argument, Darren.
Okay.
No argument. But the plan, let's be clear, the plan also says it can be a 0 increase.
Not in this case. In this case, it has a minimum of 20. The one modifier is whether they saw any birth pulses. And on the book clips, they did see one during the last 3 years. They did see production that 1 year. So they shot for a middle ground on the recommendation. You're right, though. If one's in and one's out, you can increase none. And some of the other units did that this year, for sure.
And I may be mistaken, but I don't believe I am, so I'll respectfully disagree.
That's fine.
But back to the central rack and the fawn thing, a motion was made, and then before they seconded it, someone got on the phone and says, I have Dak here, you know, and Dak says it's because of the fawns. And so the motion was withdrawn. And I don't know what's going on at the Northeast Rack, but I'll be at that rack meeting. And if... Every year it's the book list, guys. I mean, Darren, honestly, your division needs to take a look at that and try to figure out why every year it's the Northeast Rack where there's conflict with bears and elk and everything. I mean, they're not happy about anything out there. That's talking to the other rack members. And I'm not mad at anybody, but it's every year the controversy's out there.
I think it's a little bit on LaSalle and San Juan, too.
As far as?
Just problems in general. I mean, it seems like it's just because there's so many bears, so many people.
Oh, absolutely.
That's those three units get the most probably negative attention, I don't know, when it comes to all
there's
the
There's definitely
units.
The most hunters down there and the most possibility of conflict. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. So I guess the reason why you guys, just to clarify, the division's recommended 9. You want 0, but... 7 of those archery only, low success, got moved in. So you guys are saying it's really 16.
It can be argued that way.
Because now the success is going to be a lot higher when it goes into the general than it would have been if it was just archery only. Okay.
The hard
just
part,
to clarify.
Yes. Okay. The numbers from last year, 26 spring tags. 40 this year, that's an increase of 14. One more summer, that's 15. One more.
And what was the success rate on those that early? Sorry. On the 26.
Oh, that's about the 40 or 50% that he's talking about, I'm assuming.
Yeah, just to clarify that, just to see what we're really trading numbers
that
for.
That might be a higher success, Bryce, because... Maybe the bait hunters are lower success, which drive, you know, maybe it's 60 on hounds and 30 on bait, and it averages out somewhere around there.
Okay. Does anybody else have any comments while he's looking that up? Just to kind of help us see what we're trading numbers for.
And Bryce, just to clarify, I mean, I have the proclamation here, it's 13 is the division's increase from last year. And I know one of those might be an expo, but I looked at these, and last year they were listed on the expo. So it's 13 and 7, so it's 20. And the rest of the state, except for spot and stock hunts, it's 2, 4, 6. -1, -2. It's just, that's what I'm saying. Why the aggressiveness on the book cliffs and nothing else? I mean, obviously the data shows that bears are maybe stable and we don't want to increase I know that the Book Cliffs is not the best area in the state. I know it doesn't have the most bears.
Right. It might be helpful. I'm still looking, but it might be helpful to remember that the Book Cliffs is managed under a moderate strategy.
They all so are. The so LaSalle, not, San Juan, right. and the...
So the objective there isn't necessarily to grow that population. Agreed. It's to maintain or to slightly let it go one way or the other, but to kind of keep a lid on things. And that's why the parameters would suggest what they do in terms of what we recommend permit-wise. As far as the guidebook numbers, and I think part of the confusion last year is we did include, I think in the numbers that the board saw and that the RAC saw, the table, I think Expo were in there, and but they don't show up in the guidebook. And this year we don't show the Expo permits. So there's some confusion there, but maybe Aaron and I, maybe we ought to just sit down at some point and
figure it out. I'm going off of what you said.
Yeah.
It's 860 and 829. That's 31 difference. Yeah. They said 829, but they said they gave 860 last year. There wasn't a 31 tag decrease recommendation at the Wildlife Board.
Right.
So in essence, if it's not 829, if it's 860, it's not 145, it's 175 increase. Darren?
Right. I don't know if I'm totally following. I think we'd have to sit down and actually go through it line by line. That's probably, but obviously there's some confusion there between one or. Sorry about that, Jody. Okay, just success rate. So Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek South. This is last year, spring. So this is the hound hunt in the spring. 33%. Summer. This is bait. 56%. Let's see. I looked it up last night, 17% on those archery tags.
Yeah.
So
some years
so
they're zero, double. Some years they're 17.
So if you put an archery tag, 17, and so that's seven permits and they killed one bear. Right. That's kind of how that shakes out. But yeah, you may double the success rate by.
So out of the nine, probably, you're going to kill.
You may, if you put, and all seven didn't go into spring, but if you put three in, you might kill one or two of those instead of none. Possibly.
Well, the reason we request that these permits come from the hound allotment is you increased the bait by one,
mm-hmm.
you increased the fall tags by one, you increased the fall tags by four, the multi-season by one, but the spring you increased by 14.
Yeah, and that and let me look.
I'm not very good at math, but that's not nine.
Right. That includes those archery tags getting.
I agree. Yeah. It still comes out to 13.
Yeah. Yeah, so the spring hunt in 2017 was 26% success. So that's, 30-ish.
Okay.
Thank you, Darren.
Yeah, sure.
Just for the record, there's kind of, we got the presentation as a whole. We got the rigging, and we got the San Juan that are kind of our three.
Book Cliffs, sorry.
Kind of. We'll try to do this in a fairly quick, but we're going to try to do it in three motions, if you guys are all right. We'll tackle Book Cliffs first, then the rigging thing, and then the balance. So if anybody wants to make a... Unless there's any more discussion on the motion, we'll accept a motion on the Book Cliffs. Randy.
I'll make the motion not to accept the changing to the rigging.
So we have a motion from Randy to keep it to last keep year's it, number
to
zero.
To keep it as it is, the rigging rule, for the dog rigging rule.
Oh, so you're going to go rigging first.
Zero. Yeah, to leave that the way it was, not forget zero, leave that the way it was.
Okay, so we're rigging first, leave the rigging.
Yeah, don't make any changes to the rigging.
No changes to the rules. Okay. Motion?
I'll second the motion.
Second by Aaron. Discussion on the motion. All in favor, raise your hand. It's unanimous. Okay. Okay.
Okay. Next, the book cliffs.
I'll make a motion that we accept the Hound Association's proposal for a zero tag increase on the book cliffs. They currently suggest 9. We ask that it's 0. And those 9 tags be taken from the spring/hound season. So we're not affecting the bait hunters. We're not affecting the fall hunters. The houndsman will absorb that loss of opportunity.
Which map is this? Is this including the archery?
Yes, this is his map. So the division is proposing a 9 tag increase on the book cliffs. I make a motion that there's a 0 tag increase on the book cliffs, and that those 9 tags come out of the spring season. So instead of 40, it would be, and he can show the numbers, it would be 31.
Is that right?
Does that make sense, Darren?
Darren? Okay.
So the archery tags?
The archery tags are already scattered out, Darren.
Yep. Right. They've already been incorporated into the other hunts.
Yes.
It's just these additional 9.
Tags.
We're eliminating those and we're taking them all out of
the motion is we reject the 9 tag increase on the book cliffs. That's what you're proposing is a 9 tag increase.
Right.
Okay. And that those 9 tags be taken from the spring hound season.
Do we have a second?
Can you ask questions at this point?
Yes.
Can that be done and follow the plan, the bear management plan? Okay, and then I have an addendum on that question.
Is the archery tag
always followed?
Yeah, so the archery tags probably complicates things a little bit. But even if you include those 7 tags and just don't increase 9, that does take it outside of the plan parameters because we should have increased, according to the plan, between 11 and 23. But the RAC can recommend what it wants, and the board will have to weigh those recommendations.
Well, I guess the argument to that, Darren, is we've increased when we shouldn't have the last few years, and that's outside of the parameters of the plan.
He answered my question.
Yeah, that's true.
The social aspect always falls outside of the plan, so. I need a second.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a second from Darren. Questions on the motion? All in favor? 3, all opposed? 6. Motion fails. We want to try another one on the book cliffs.
Do you have to get the comments from the people that said no? I thought we did.
Yeah.
Is the only reason I bring it
up. Mike, you want to start?
I those of you who know me, I always vote with the sportsman. I'm a sportsman's rep. With that, you know, to echo some of Aaron's comments earlier about the division and the time and effort that goes into this, these decisions aren't made lightly. And there seems to be a bit of a disconnect in the numbers and things of that nature. But they bring 9. We haven't had a consistency in the tags in the last several years, you know, is what I'm understanding and what I've read. Now's the time to do that. Then let's start low and ease into it. So I'm not in favor of the 9, totally washing them off the table, but I'd be more secure, more comfortable with a small increase, and let's not jump at that many all at once. So I'm part way there. I don't feel like there's got to be a little give and take. So I know that's probably longer an explanation than anybody needed, but that's kind of where I'm at.
Thank you.
A lot of the same, just weighing the information and when Darren says that it does not fall within the plan, the studies that have been done, that's my reasoning.
Okay, thank you. Matt?
So my primary concern was just that the plan does call for an increase, and it is the increase that they're calling for is already on the conservative end.
Okay, thank you.
I'm in favor of the issue of getting back on track, and I think we have to suck up some inconsistency in order to become consistent again.
Okay, thank you. Chad?
I kind of play on both sides because I do agree with a whole lot with what Aaron said, but I've also worked for the government for 27 years, and every time there's election or every time there's a change in a plan or a plan gets made and there's movements that get made, at some point you got to drop the hammer and say, now we're going to start over. This plan could change again with a new biologist. The sheriff's office could change with a new election. The county government changes with a new executive. And at some point, unfortunately, Aaron, at some point you got to say, now we're going to follow the plan, and that's my reasoning.
Thank you.
I think most of it's already been said, but I just agree that we need to follow the plan, whether we're on the high end or low end. I think we need to be more conservative, but we'll see where we go from here.
Okay, thank you. So, kind of sounds like maybe somewhat.
I guess a little bit more discussion before we have another motion then. Just so we're all clear, I agree. Drop the hammer and let's lock these numbers in for 3 years. We're dropping in at a very aggressive number on a declining bear population that's going to negatively affect it. The rest of the state, they haven't. And so we want to lock it in. We're in favor of doing that. I agree with what you said. But you can make the argument we haven't been following the plan. And to be quite honest, a zero increase across this board would be following the plan, not this. And we're not arguing that.
No, I understand that.
We want to lock it in for 3 years. I'm 100% for that because this yo-yo in every year is ridiculous.
No, I agree.
And so we just want to be conservative. We want to err on the side of conserve, drought year, zero cub survival. So that's why the houndsmen want on that particular unit.
And it'll make our meeting every December a little shorter.
Amen. I know that there is some comments, and I don't want to direct anyone to make a motion, but some of the people said that they may be there halfway. I can make another motion, but I don't want to waste anybody's time. If it's possible that someone wants to make a motion on maybe a smaller reduction, so maybe not 9, but maybe halfway, or the central rack was going to do 2 because of the 7, so that would be the 9. Something to that, and if you guys want, I can make one of those motions, but I don't want to be the only one here making motions and everyone's pissed I'm trying to change everything.
So if somebody wants to jump at it, I'm open for a motion. Gary?
I'll make a motion that we reduce the book cliffs from 9 to 2 with the 7 archery tags. That's 9. That's what they want. And so there would not be an increase of 9, there would just be an increase of 2. And those 2 are taken out of the spring season.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Second from Mike. Discussion on the motion. Call for a vote. All in favor? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All opposed. 1, 2, 3. Motion passes. Okay. With that, if anybody has any more discussion or the motion on the balance.
Do you want them to say the reason why, or is that good enough?
Oh, sorry.
The
I mean, I it's probably going to be the same, but yeah. Yeah, same. Okay, same reason why. Thank you for reminding me. Balance on the remainder of the presentation.
I'll make a motion that we accept the balance of the bear recommendations as presented by the DWR.
I'll second it.
Okay. Okay, got a motion by Aaron, second by Mike. The balance is presented. Discussion on the motion. All in favor?
Okay, it's unanimous. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you very much.
The next.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.
Is not Kent. It is Jim. No, it's not Kent.
Thank
you. Hey, Bryce?
Yes.
I have to leave in 15 minutes. You remember?
Yes.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
If I get up and leave, don't wait for me.
Jody knows and Justin knows, so thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Christensen. I will be presenting the Utah Pronghorn plans, unit plans. I will be doing that instead of Kent Hersey. I am the Cache District Wildlife Biologist and the Assistant Regional Wildlife Manager. Okay, so if you remember last fall, the statewide pronghorn plan was presented and approved by the Wildlife Board. This year, the unit plans are being presented, and unit plans are modeled after the statewide plan. When we come up with our unit plans, we cannot vary from what was passed in the statewide plan, and so we have not presented unit plans before, and we will not present them again unless the units have a significant increase or a significant change to boundary, to population objective, or if a new unit is being proposed, then its plan will then be presented to the RAC and the board. And the reason for this is to where we model after the statewide plan, we don't want to overburden RAC and board members with plans that have already been approved. And so, like I mentioned before, though, if there is a significant change, we will bring those changes through the process. If there are other smaller changes, which would include something along the lines of habitat or predation risk or something like that, they can be approved by the division director. Okay, just to review the statewide plan briefly, last year we changed the way we manage our bucks. We previously managed on a buck-to-doe ratio. Last year we were presented with some data showing that buck antelope reach maximum horn growth between 2 and 3 years of age. And so we changed to an age objective of harvested buck antelope, buck pronghorn, excuse me. And that is between 2 and 3. And we felt like there would be more opportunity available to hunters based on that data. We have not got the ages back yet to see where we're at, but we will discuss that when we make permit recommendations in later here in a couple months. Part of the statewide plan too was to look at ways to increase opportunity, and that would be through implementing more archery and muzzleloader hunts to the units. Part of every unit plan is a population goal and objective, as long as the statewide plan. Our population management goal is to manage pronghorn to their population objectives and within the carrying capacity of available habitats. So we look at the habitat. We do not want to degrade it. Other factors play into the population objective, such as agricultural concerns. And then the statewide population objective is merely a sum of the unit population objectives. So currently in the state, we have an objective of just over 21,500 pronghorn. Our estimate is we are just over 17,300
So we are slightly below where we would like to be statewide. And I will go through and show our objectives with our estimates across the state, region by region. And you'll be able to see where we're at currently. So in the central region, we're slightly below objective across the three different units. Have some room to make up there by another 1,200 animals. In the northeastern region, similar story. The South Slope Diamond Mountain Bonanza, we're right at objective. All the other units, we have room for growth to meet our objective. Here in the northern region, the majority of our units are right around our objective, minus the promontory. Promontory got hit pretty hard by the winter two winters ago and reduced our population size. So we have more room to grow there. But the others, we're nearing where we want to be. Southeastern region, the San Rafael North is one of the few units in the state that's over objective. But they can be managed with more antlerless permits on those units. In the southern region, similar to the rest of the state, have some room to grow. In the statewide plan, we identified transplant sites, and just because we identify transplant site does not necessarily mean we will be releasing pronghorn at those sites. If the opportunity is needed and arises, we want to have those sites identified and approved before we get to that point. There are some additional sites that I would like to propose to be added to the statewide transplant list, and if approved, these sites would be the statewide plan would be amended to include these sites. They're all over in the northeast region, on the north slope of the Uinta Mountains, up on Antelope Flat, Bear Top, Clay Basin, Connor Basin, Death Valley, and Goslin Mountain. Also, with every unit plan, we have a habitat portion of the plan. And across the board, one of the main things that need to happen on our pronghorn units is to improve water, both distribution and maintain the systems that are currently there. Also, we need to increase our habitat treatments to improve our forb production for the pronghorn. And with that, also, we're looking to identify migration routes and corridors and any barriers that may impede pronghorn. Thank you. With that, I'll take any questions.
Questions from the public? Questions from the rack? Randy.
Quick question for you on the water, because as I was reading through the proposal that was sent out, it's listed everywhere and you had mentioned it. Mm-hmm. This came up last year as well. Are there any specific plans in place to maintain or create? Because it's mostly guzzlers you're talking about. Are there any actual maintenance plans in place to take care of the existing ones and the new ones?
Yeah, so currently our habitat section is tasked with maintaining those guzzlers mainly. And every year they go out, because the majority of them have their valve that needs to be shut off when it starts to freeze, so we don't break the valves. And so they go out every year and they visually inspect every single one of those guzzlers. And the majority of the guzzlers, I won't say every one of them because there's a lot out there, but they'll visually inspect all those that at least have the valve that needs to be turned on and off. And then they'll, as budget allows and time allows, they'll fix the ones that need repair.
And then this would be maybe more for me, because I know some guzzers are being put in out in Western Box Elder, combination big game and small game.
Right.
I've never seen a management plan, and I know I run across a lot of small game and combination that aren't. Is there a place where you can, where an individual can find that information to know how it's
being
done?
Know that there's a specific maintenance schedule written in a plan, other than just when they go out to turn the valves on and off, they can inspect and determine if there's some repairs that are needed. Because not all guzzlers are the same. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, they don't all have the valves, the boss tank style guzzlers. You know, they wouldn't be checked as often as the ones with the valve.
Yeah, I've put in plenty.
Yeah.
So, okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Right. Jim, real quick, I didn't see the Ogden on there. What is the population where we've got the Ogden, Cash, Rich, Morgan is a combined unit?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the population on there. And are we identifying Ogden as an area we want to grow antelope, or is it just kind of an overlap from the Cache and the Rich?
The Ogden is kind of an overlap.
Okay.
There's not a huge population on the Ogden.
But we got them at 8,000 feet.
Right. We recognize that there are some there, and right. That's why we included it with the Cache.
Oh, so it's in the Morgan South Rich?
Right.
Because I think that tag's combined, right?
Ogden. Right. So it's all combined. We do have a separate plan for the Cache and North Rich, as well as the South Rich and Morgan. And then the Ogden population is so low, we don't actively manage for pronghorn okay. there, but we know they're there, and so we encompass it in the hunt boundary.
Perfect. That was curiosity. Thanks, Jim. Any other questions?
No, I appreciate your clarification, because I've lived in Cache County for 50 years and I've seen one antelope. And you got us for 750 or 800. So I appreciate the clarification that you included Rich County as well.
Yeah.
Comments. We have no comments. Cards from the public. Comments from the public. Comments from the rack. And or motions. I'll make a motion that we accept the plan as presented. Thank you. Kevin, second it. Okay. Got a motion from Mike, second from Kevin. We accept the proposal as presented. Comments on the proposal or comments on the motion? All in favor? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You gonna do the moose one now?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Also, again, been asked to present the statewide moose plans for the individual units. Similar to the pronghorn, last year at this time, the statewide moose plan was presented and approved by the Wildlife Board. And now the unit plans are being presented in accordance with that plan. Also similar to the pronghorn unit plans, the moose unit plans will not be presented to the RAC and the board again unless we are proposing a major boundary change in the population objective, or if a new unit plan is being presented. And again, all other changes to the unit plans will be approved by the DWR director. Currently in the state, we have 10 units and 10 corresponding plans to be presented. As you can see, the majority of these are in our region, as we are at the southern extent of Moose Range. So of those 10, again, you can see that they're on the majority in our region. For the statewide plan, our objective number one in there is to increase hunting opportunities as populations allow, while maintaining quality hunting experiences. If you recall, last year we adjusted the way we manage our bulls in our hunt structure. We had a wider range on our ages of harvested bull. with the statewide plan, we shrunk that range down. Data was showing that year in and year out, on average, we're killing around four-year-old bulls, and we felt like we were missing some opportunity on the landscape because we had such a wide range of ages that we were managing for. We did not have as much management flexibility. And so with the passage of the statewide plan, that we're managing closer to that four-year-old age of harvested bull. And to get to that age of harvested bull, we use the subunits to maximize the hunting opportunities and distribute hunters across the landscape. Okay, for population objectives and estimates, so Box Elder is a new unit that we have a moose population that's starting. We're getting some movement from other states into that northwest corner of Box Elder County. And so we come up with the plan. We got an objective of 75 with an estimate of 20 currently. Cash unit. I guess you can look at the numbers there. Really, the only change that we are making compared to what we have been doing in the past is on the Ogden unit. The population objective was increased to 450. For the last several years, on our surveys out of the helicopter, we've been surveying up around the 500 range to come up with our population estimate. And so we increased that objective. We did not go all the way up to the 500 range because we still get nuisance moose coming into town that we have to keep moving as they cause a safety concern for residents down in town. And so we still want to be able to harvest antlerless moose and bring our overall moose population on the Ogden down slightly. But all the others, there are no changes to what we have been doing in the past. Again, similar to the pronghorn plan, we have moose transplant sites. And again, just because we have a transplant site does not mean we are going to have a special project to move moose into those areas. Again, the majority of these locations are used when we get a random nuisance moose in town, that we need a place to take it. And so we are proposing some additional transplant sites in the northern region. In the Camas unit, we would like to add the Shingle Creek, Beaver Creek, Norway Flats areas to that site, to that list. On the North Slope, we'd like to add Dahlgren Creek, Dowd Mountain Elk Park, Henry's Fork, Sheep Creek Lake, and Spirit Lake. And then over on the South Slope, we'd like to add Charlie's Park, Lighty Peak, Long Park Reservoir, and Mosby Mountain. And if these sites are approved, Table 5 in the statewide plan will be amended to reflect these changes. With our habitat improvement portion of these plans, again, all these 10 different unit plans were very similar in the goals and objectives in order to improve moose populations. And habitat is a major component of that. So across the board, we like to preserve and regenerate mountain mahogany, aspen, and riparian vegetation. Like to implement these habitat improvement projects through the Watershed Restoration Initiative to benefit the moose so that we can maintain populations at appropriate densities to maintain our habitat quality. In some areas, we have seen some habitat degradation, and so we've seen it necessary to implement some antlerless hunts in those areas. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Questions from the public? Questions from the RAC?
Sorry, it's more a curiosity question. Are you looking at possible transplant sites to the box elder to supplement those ones that have moved in naturally?
We held a kind of an informal meeting out there, and that was met with some resistance when we brought up the possibility of improving the populations out there through some of these nuisance moose, bringing them out. And so for the time being, we will not be taking any out there until we can get maybe an official committee formed out there to discuss that possibility.
Okay. We don't have any cards on the... So no comments from the public, so comments and or motions.
I'll make a motion to approve the plan as presented.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Got a motion to approve the plan as presented, second by Mike. Comments on the motion? Discussion on the motion, I mean. All in favor? Okay. It's unanimous.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks. Appreciate it. Avery Cook is going to do our last two, a CHA rule amendment. First off,
I'm Avery Cook, Upland Game Project Leader for the Utah Division of Wildlife, going to be proposing some changes to the commercial hunting area rule.
Hold on one second. It's not...
I'll start that over.
There we go.
Got weird little piece of the top on the bottom there, too. Anyway, commercial hunting area proposed rule amendments. Just a little bit of background on commercial hunting areas. So commercial hunting areas are areas within the state where pen-reared birds are released on private lands for hunting purposes. CHAs typically charge a fee to a person coming on, either a daily fee or a per-bird fee or both. Commercial hunting areas provide a significant amount of additional upland game hunting opportunity in the state, with roughly 19,000 annual hunter days. And as of now, we've got 76 current commercial hunting areas in the state, and those range from real small operations up to operations that are releasing almost 20,000 birds a year. The Division of Wildlife regulates commercial hunting areas, despite them being basically privately owned birds released on private land, because of the potential for impacts to our wildlife populations. So there's potential to impact wintering and breeding, both game birds and other wildlife. There's potential for disease transmission from these high density areas where the birds are grown to wild populations and to the poultry industry. There's also potential for lethal take of wild game birds. Some of the, especially native grouse, look pretty similar to hen pheasants, which are permitted to be taken on commercial hunting areas. And just within Utah and our commercial hunting areas, they can be permitted to release pheasant, chucker, and quail species. Annually, these are from the past season. We had about 90,000 pheasants released, 16,000 chuckers, and 2,000 quail across those 76 commercial hunting areas in the state. The rules that I'm proposing to be changed today are primarily to streamline the process for both operators and the DWR, to make the application and annual reporting process less burdensome, less paperwork. Yeah. So specifically trying to eliminate some redundant applications, allow us to do some digital mapping rather than current requirements of paper maps, to simplify reporting, to update some boundary marking requirements, clarify some rule language, and also add some disease testing requirements to be consistent with other rules in the state. So just go through all of the specific changes. First is the update of map requirement to allow for digital mapping. In the past, we've required county plot map, plat maps and USGS paper topo maps. And also proposing to require boundary verification for renewal applications. And that's kind of stemming from over the years, you often have commercial hunting areas that have 10, 15, 20 years of renewal applications, and we've found that the boundaries do drift over time, so we'd be planning to just require a verification, which would be just sending the CHA the current map and having them verify that, that our records, in fact, match what's on the ground. Also be updating the acreage requirement. Currently, a single CHA is limited to 1,920 acres or three sections, and we're proposing to increase that to 5,760 acres or nine sections. And that proposed change is because we often have larger CHAs that are having to split up applications and apply multiple times for what is essentially in practice the same CHA, and then retain the same 180-acre minimum. Also looking at updating our boundary marking requirements, we got comments that the 300 feet required in the current rule was a little excessive, so we're proposing to change that to every 300 yards, and that would be consistent with the CWMU rule as well. Currently, each CHA is required to be in one contiguous block of land, and we're proposing to remove that requirement, but retain the minimum of 180 acres per parcel. That change is due to many CHAs or a few having parcels that are either kitty corner, section corners together, or having two pieces across the road from each other. So the CHA is operating as a single CHA, but their operators having to turn in multiple applications because the pieces of the property are separate, even if it's only a small distance. So we're just proposing that all sections or all parcels of the CHA would just have to be within a 10 mile diameter circle. So just a few examples of how that would play out on that leftmost one would just be one big block within that area. The second one over would be just kind of an example where a CHA could be broken up with the smallest pieces would be a minimum of 180 acres, and then you could have other combinations thereof as long as they were within that 10-mile diameter circle. If two parcels did not fit within the 10-mile diameter circle, then they would have to file two separate applications, as in that third example there. And then that fourth example is just kind of a more realistic example of how a lot of our CHAs currently are, where we've got multiple blocks with multiple applications, and under the new proposed rule, instead of that CHA having to file three applications, they would just have to file one. In the current rule, there's a provision for a season extension, and it's got some caveats where it can't be impacting any of our other wildlife species with that season extension. So we're essentially never able to extend that season or use that season extension. We're proposing to remove that from rule to basically reduce effort from operators asking for something that we can't give them, and then effort from the DWR side and having to explain that we can't actually extend that season. Also changing the way that applications would work for new CHAs. Currently, we just have a single application period each year. So if an operator is looking at getting going, they wouldn't receive their permit until right before the season starts, which is really too late to get the operation up and running. So we're looking at just allowing rolling applications. So anytime a new operator would like to turn in an application, they can do that any time of year. Also, an update to shooting hours. There's currently a provision where if a CHA is adjacent to a waterfowl management area, they're basically following the waterfowl hunt hours rather than resident game bird type hunt hours. So we're just looking at making the change so that since people are hunting what are the same species as some of our resident game birds, the hunt hours would match up. So it would add a half hour after sunrise to a few CHAs. We also were looking at adding avian influenza and mycoplasma to the disease testing requirements if the birds are sourced from a non-NPIP facility. And this is to be consistent with both the Department of Ag rules on imports of birds into the state. And this is following recommendations from our state wildlife veterinarian and the Department of Agriculture to kind of get out in front of some potential disease issues that we have. Avian influenza that regularly turns up in the state in our waterfowl populations. And there's, in 2015, a pretty big outbreak in some hen layer industries in the Midwest. So there's significant risk there, and we need to get out and do what we can to reduce that risk to both the game bird growing operators and our poultry industry within the state. Also looking at updating the reporting requirements. In the current rule, we require reporting of birds harvested, birds released, and mortalities by date. We're looking at changing that to just requiring season totals to make reporting easier, less burdensome, less paperwork. Because really as a division, we're just trying to get an idea of the scale of each operation, and we don't need date-by-date records turned in each year to us. And we'd also update the mortality reporting requirements. Currently, the rule just says that operator needs to report all the mortalities that they experience in their operation, but there's quite a bit of normal mortality associated with raising game birds, which the division is not concerned about. But we would like to be notified if there's sickness, disease, issues with bad feed or other unknown causes in unusual mortality events. And we're also proposing to require immediate reporting for unusual mortality events in order to be able to prevent larger scale disease outbreaks. There are a few additional wording revisions that clarify a few clauses but do not change the meaning of the rule. Thank you.
Questions from the public? Questions from the rack? Matt.
In the rule, is there a definition for unusual mortality?
I do not believe we defined it.
I'd say if a Martian got it, it's pretty unusual, but...
Yeah, well, I guess that leads to the question, I mean, how are we going to enforce this if we don't have a definition of what triggers the reporting requirement?
I guess it's kind of depending on the operators to know what is a normal rate of mortality on their operations, and if there is something up and above that, we would hope that they would report that to us if we did become aware of a large die-off or another event on an operation, then we could enforce that.
Chris.
Avery, what does the acronym NPIP stand for?
National Poultry Improvement Plan.
Thank you.
Okay. No comment cards, no comments from the public. Comments? or motions?
I'd motion that we accept the proposal as presented.
Thank you, Randy. Got a second?
I'll second.
Chad, second. Okay, motion is accept as presented. No discussion on the motion. All in favor? Okay, passed, unanimous. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to be proposing the greater sage-grouse population augmentation for the Sheeprock Mountain sage-grouse management area. A little background on the Sheeprock sage-grouse management area and sage-grouse in general in the state. So the Division of Wildlife has records going back to the late 50s tracking leks throughout the state. And over that time period, we've seen kind of a long-term gradual decrease in the overall population. But due to proactive conservation measures by state DWR, federal entities, and others, we have been able to prevent listings under the Endangered Species Act as recent as 2015 when sage-grouse were deemed not warranted under the Endangered Species Act. And if you look at that history of leks within the state, you can see a very regular, about 9 or 10 year cyclic behavior with the populations going up and down. If you look on this graph, the blue line is all of the sage-grouse within the state, and you can see that it's following that cyclic behavior right there. But in 2012, 2011, we had our last kind of population trough, and then the population went back up statewide and in all of our sage-grouse management areas except for the Sheeprocks. And you can see it continued to follow a downward trend rather than rebounding like expected. Due to that continued population decline in the Sheeprocks, we initiated quite a few conservation measures, both through habitat improvement projects, some predator control, and a sage-grouse augmentation. So 3 years ago, the Wildlife Board approved 3 years of transplants, and we carried out those transplants in 2016, 17, and 18, moving a total of 120 sage-grouse, which was 90 females and 30 males. As a result of all the conservation measures we've put in place in the Sheeprocks and these transplants, we've seen the population change its trajectory and is on the upward trend. So today we are requesting an additional 5-year extension of the translocation release site, and that would be coupled with continued other conservation measures with the habitat improvements and continued predator control. So as a state-sensitive species, there's some additional requirements required before we translocate them, so we have to have a management plan, which is in place. The proposal has to go through the Resource Development Coordinating Committee and go out for comment there. We've completed that and did not receive any comments. And then finally, we need Wildlife Board approval of the transplant site. So we're asking for approval of the Sheeprock Mountain sage-grouse management area as a transplant release site for sage-grouse. Within the SGMA, sage-grouse would be released on active leks. And we're looking at moving those birds from either the Parker Mountain or Box Elder sage-grouse management areas. Those areas are genetically similar. They have robust populations. They're geographically close where logistically we can do it, but they're far enough away where the birds won't just head straight back. So we're proposing to transport and release up to 40 sage-grouse per year And we're going to evaluate each year, so we're not necessarily going to do all 5 years. We will at least do one more year if approved this year, which will be coupled with continued research. So we'll put radio collars on the released birds and on some resident birds. After this next year of research, we'll continue following the radio collars until they run out of battery, but we'll probably not be collaring additional birds. Thanks.
Questions? Questions from the rack.
Sorry, it's my night.
You're good.
Avery, you talked about predator control. What I can't remember when it came out, but a recent Utah State study that I read on the sage grouse, the vast majority of the nests that were lost were from crows and ravens. Is there, can he address that at all? There's what efforts, if any, can be done? Because I know ravens are, you know, have some limited protection.
Yes, so for the predator control on the sheep rocks, we're primarily contracting through Wildlife Services, and they have the ability to put out poison eggs for raven control, and then they're primarily targeting fox as nest predator in the sheep rocks as well.
Does it have very much, do you have very much success on the ravens?
There is some, yeah. We're still a little limited in the volume of raven control we can do as far as numbers permitted by the Fish and Wildlife Service.
Okay. Is it possible to get a variance on that from them?
From the Fish and Wildlife Service?
Uh-huh.
Theoretically.
Okay. That answers that. Okay.
So, Kevin.
Yeah, Avery, just to follow up on that, I see, you know, we talk about crows and ravens. We have a crow season, but we don't have a raven season. I don't see any crows. All I see is ravens, and I want to put a straight tail on them, but you can't. So why, I'm just curious, you may have some information, why isn't there a season on ravens?
Ravens are protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
And again, theoretically it could be changed, but it isn't going to happen. Okay.
Yeah.
You got a pretty good poker face. Any other questions? No comments from the public? Comments and or motions? Kevin.
Make a motion that we accept the transplant recommendation as presented.
Second. Matt. Got a motion, we accept it as presented. Seconded. Discussion on the motion. All in favor? This time 7. Okay. Thank you. And with that, we will adjourn. If must, anybody has heartburn with that? Okay. When's our next meeting? In March, I guess. So we'll be gone for a while, but have a good holiday, guys. We'll see you in March.